many of you know, Mike Schneider has written extensively on Pittsburgh publications, including award-winning articles in Pittsburgh Magazine, as Jimmy noted, and thanked him, and we do thank him. He organized a February 2003 Market Square reading where 27 Pittsburgh area poets expressed their opposition to the impending war in Iraq. He received a 2003-2004 Creative Artist Stipend, an arts commentary for the Pennsylvania Council of the Arts, and he has been published in a lot of great and wonderful places, including Shenandoah, Poet Lore, Poetry, Cimarron Review, Hunger Mountain, Notre Dame Review most recently, and he has a really fine chapbook published by Main Street Rag. I don't know if you have any copies of that?
Actually, okay.
Well, you can get them. You can go to Main Street Rag and order it. Okay, it's still available. And it's a fine chapbook.
We
could grab Mike. Yeah, say Mike. Come on now. And he has completed work on a new chapbook called Naked Umbrellas and a full-length manuscript called Sidewise, which we really look forward to seeing print. And it's great to have Mike Schneider here. Mike Schneider.
Thank you very much, Joan. Thank you very much, Jim. And thanks for the pleasure of hearing Roberta and Jill and Steve.
Thank you.
Haven't seen you for a long time. It's really a pleasure. Thank you. Anyway, this is a poem called Western Medicine, and it's one that wasn't written in February 2003 when we had that event. Thank you very much for your big support at that event, Jim. I appreciate it. But this is set in March 2003 when it was called the Shock and Awe Campaign. Some of us will remember the beginning of the bombing in Iraq, and I was visiting my dentist. At least that's the premise here. Talking faces on TV assure me that our airstrikes on Baghdad are surgical, precise. My dentist Thelma dons her mask and leans into my mouth. Innocents are not the target, they say, as if to appease me when I think of my daughter, fair-skinned, blonde, and feel the pinch, precisely sharpened steel, entering my gums as Thelma numbs me. Into the mouth of Baghdad, stealthy bombers swarm like blackbirds. The only sound, Thelma's howling drill. Relax, I tell myself, and fold my hands like a prayer for this to be over. Our missiles strike like matches, flashing into flame, and the blue-eyed commander, a jaw settled on destruction, says good against evil. Thelma reaches for a scraping tool. After you say these words, good, evil, where do they go? Do they rise in the smoke from charred bones? Is it lucky to die? They don't ask that on TV. Above her mask, Thelma's trained eyes peer into my mouth. My eyes close and I picture calm blue sea, azure blaze of sky. I want this to be over. A woman on TV, glossy lips moving, such white teeth, surgical, precise. Words like anesthetizing vapor drift and dissipate in soft pillows of cloud, while worlds away, a busy marketplace in Baghdad, a young woman, dark eyes, jet black hair, inspects an avocado. Silence roars. She's not my daughter. Thelma drops her mask, smiles, says, we're done. I spit blood and rinse as if it's over. All right, I have three more poems, and a couple of them are pretty new. So this one's called Hard as a Hammer. Everywhere I go for breakfast, eggs are scrambled like my father in my brain. and everyone looks hard-boiled. Hard, ain't it hard, say faces on the street, like Sally waiting tables at the Pickle Barrel, her face that strikes like a hammer saying, keep your distance, like my father's toy hammer that wasn't a toy. Hard as when other people's easiness gets hard to take, like the couple on the big TV above the counter, kissy face in love with their miracle drug. Nothing wrong with a good heart on, but I'm thinking of my father's mother, my grandma, rocking slowly back and forth on her kitchen rocker. Sex, a word seldom heard, I expect, in the 1930s, hard as it was, raising three boys, oatmeal and Spam, potatoes from the potato bin, eyes reaching out like vines. Sally pours a stream of steaming coffee. The hardwood planks in Grandma's kitchen creaked to the rhythm of her rocker. Summertime, she'd pare an apple, slice it into cool slivers. I'm thinking of my father's father, my grandpa, night shift at the brass mill, sleep hard to get. To my father, who was five, he said, put away your hammer. I have to go to work now. Little boy, Thor, hammer crashing on a nail head until it disappears in a slab of pine. Bang, bang. We have to stop, said Grandpa. It's time. Are you finished? Asks Sally, simple gold cross gleaming from a chain at her throat. She wants to take my plate, the smeared remains of home fries and toast. Not yet. I've got a few good years to go, I say straight-faced. With a sidewise glint of hard-up smile, she sees me now. My father lifts his toy hammer, bangs it on his father's head. Hard. He really did that. My grandpa took the hammer to the basement, threw it in the belly of the furnace. Flaming coals, clang, went the cast iron door. Next day he fished it out, cleaned the head, remade the handle, turned and shaped it on the lathe in his workshop that smelled of engine parts and oil, gave it to my father, and said nothing. All right. Thank you. All right, this is called Beethoven Quartet, and it's so it's kind of like a string quartet because it's got four movements, and so this is the first movement. The first violin is a leaf falling slowly. The blind lady next to me traces its downward curve with her fingertips on the score. Her dog is curled at her feet, patiently alert, unlike my sciatic nerve that twitches and chirps like a green bird in my leg as the viola makes the lapping sound of a small river. The cello now is the moon, aloof, pretending not to notice how quietly a man tiptoes past the sleeping watchdog into the garden of his fierce old age. He's about to do something so forlorn it's forbidden. Maybe that's why the second violin's eyes glisten as if they know a secret, which is there's no way out of this garden. Why, says the old man, why did I want so much? The second movement is Lonely Man, Ludwig, passion roaring like summer fire through a dry forest, courting a 19-year-old beauty. She wouldn't have him, half crazy coot, half deaf, imperious as an ancient tree, still climbing toward light. Should anyone be surprised that this music asks from us only this, to float bodiless on a layer of charmed air at dawn's twilight over the city, over the planet. And third movement. My friend Ruth loved to watch her pet tarantula feed on small creatures as she listened to late Beethoven quartets. Life passes so quickly, it takes your breath away. Sorrow, salvation, words beginning with S from the end of tenderness. Beethoven, word that means, here's my madness, my fury. It's yours too, and my joy more huge than the moon. Its light, like a sheen on black water, is my surrender to the serene peace of my soul. Though the disagreements within me struggle on and require a clown's mask to hide how I laugh, how I resolve into magic, how everything I say means, listen, this is the love I have and no one to share it. The last movement is Sweetness, Tomorrow, Light, the Cavatina, Opus 130. Is it possible to climb a ladder rung by rung and at the same time tumble downward, flailing in midair, lost and alone? To give up or hold till morning once more? To clutch the first cup of coffee, beseech it, please dig me out from this darkness. Every day, tears and slide trombones, until the cello, angered, swings an axe to smash the frozen river, and the man in the magical garden of his fierce old age smiles and says to himself, who knew I'd want so much? And I'm going to close with this poem, which is called This Is the Way. And I want to dedicate this poem to my friend, who I sometimes call my Marxist comrade, and doesn't really have anything to do with this poem, but there's an article in the New York Times today about this remarkable woman who happens to be the great-granddaughter of Trotsky and also happens to be the director of the National Institute of Drug Abuse, and is the scientist more than any other person who has done the research that has established and is establishing that addiction of all kinds, it's a disease. It's not about whether you have the character to say no or yes. It's a disease. It's physiological. And she has the brain scans to show it. So, way to go, Trotsky. Anyway, that has nothing to do with this poem, but it's in today's paper. Oh, there's a video, too. She's a remarkable woman. Okay. This is the way. Fingers curl around the outcurved belly of a cello, carved maple burnished to glow, almost alive as you lift and place it like precious pearl into the shell of its case. Because the music has ended and the moment rings, spine loosened as nerves gather waves from the air, after music wakened in the hollow of the bones, the way words of a poem wait their turn, shuffling down corridors until you least expect a door to open, a mouth to say that leaves of the sweet gum tree are yellow stars fallen into your hand, as if the sky could shatter in small pieces, each torn fragment pungent as bread in the morning, when you and I are gloriously alone, time having strangely failed to move us, blanket rumpled, sheet twisted between us, the way your hand, like a boat on dark water, rowed across the distance that night. You touched my wrist, a moment becoming this, the sun as it lifts out of blackness, reaching to slant through the blinds and brighten your hair on the pillow beside me. Everything is here, right here. Thank you very much.